seemed at one point like a 2-0 win against Cardiff and Neil Warnock getting sent off to the stands was about as good a value for money as you can get for a Monday night, no matter how cold it's going to be. But as it quite often happens with Reading FC, it ended up being a 2-2 draw and perhaps the best advert there is for leaving a game early. Welcome to episode 147 of the Tireless End Podcast. I'm Mark Mayer, as usual, your host, and joining me this evening, live on Skype, or as live, as they call it in television, is Dave Handbags Harris. How's it going, mate?
Not too bad. How are you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm warmed up now. I think it's I've learned to put 5 layers of jumpers on for these sort of evening games, but then it's the feet that numb, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 pairs of socks you need, a minimum, and a couple of layers over the legs, and feed the socks over the inner layer, and Bob's your uncle. I was quite nice and roasty-toasty last night, so I did forget my gloves, though. That was a bit of a disaster, given that I had to drive home.
Yeah, well, I bet. My dad is one for the long johns, which I feel is a bit of a relic when it comes to fashion. Something that quite embarrassed me when I was a kid, but I just sort of get on with it now.
Well, when you come from a military family like I do, you know, they're par for the course, they are.
I bet, yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll crack on and talk in a moment in recap. Next week, I'll just give a quick notice for the hoping to record the Xmas podcast from the Ibis Hotel on the Oxford Road. That'll be Monday night, I'm hoping. This is just a little bit preliminary at the moment, but it seems like we've got everything in order. And you'll be seeing everything on the Tireless End Twitter and Facebook as we get the run-up to the awards show. Obviously, it's the end of the year awards. And also a quick word for the Patreon campaign, of course. That's always up and running on thetirelessend.com. There'll be a link to this on the article itself for the podcast and on the Podbean. Just if you think we're doing a good job, and if you're not, then I'm planning on putting out a little survey over Christmas period for you guys to tell me what you want to change, what you want to see more of and less of. And, well, speaking of things you want to see less of, we'll have to crack on and talk about the Cardiff draw, as it turned out to be, and we'll be doing that now in the recap.
The view from the Tarhurst end. Recapping all this week's action.
Right, so going into this one, Handbags, it was a little bit of a Wolves rerun, I felt. We're going into another game where we had to have a bit of affirmation of our form and seeing if we're actually as good as we think we are. And for the first half, we actually thought we were pretty decent. We had a decent start. Somewhat lucky goals, would you say, that we couldn't really get against Wolves?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, certainly the first 45 minutes, we were well on top. But you say struggled to actually find that cutting edge that we require. You're right that the goals were slightly unfortunate, but take nothing away from Liam Cuddy for the first delivery. It was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Into that corridor of uncertainty that defenders and goalkeepers absolutely hate. It was a lovely little flick on as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and yeah, the second one, Beckham, but Barrow chanced his arm. Yeah, there were good goals, but it's a shame that we are just lacking that. You know, even though we're saying we scored quite a few goals over the last few weeks, but it does just feel as though there's a hiding in there. One team one day is going to take an absolute pasting because of the quality of chances that we're creating on a fairly consistent basis, and we're not taking them at the moment.
No, it does feel like there's still a game where everything still has to fall in place, and at the times it looked like this was going to be the game. You know, Barrett scoring again, he was the club's player of the month, and he's actually the Tireless End's player of the month as well for November. I mean, comparing Barrow to Aluko, do you think that Barrow is actually maybe the one that we've got a complete bargain out of, whereas Aluko, who's the more expensive player, isn't showing as much, you know, day to day on the pitch?
I think certainly at the moment Barrow looks far more potent. If we can just get his final ball in, up to a fairly consistent level, you'd certainly look to him and have to say that he is the better value player, certainly. I think Aluko shows flashes of what he can do, but it's all too scarce, it's all too rare. And even though he's had chances aplenty to scoring, remember the open goal against Hull, he's struggled a little bit to actually remain in games. He's very much on the periphery. Whether or not that's because he carries a fairly, in our standards, a fairly hefty price tag, and other teams look at him as the danger man, I don't know, and they haven't quite worked out Barrow yet. Barrow will have to see what happens in 4 to 6 months' time when teams have worked him out, and teams have worked out how to counteract his pace. And we'll see what happens then. Certainly Cabay, Jimmy Cabay under McDermott, when he first started flying, he was, the first half of 2010-11 was fairly quiet because teams seemed to just work him out. And I think we'll probably see the same with Barrow. But I think Barrow is a step above Jimmy Cabay. Certainly every bit is quick and much more technical. Doesn't rely so much on luck in some ways to take a man on. Finds himself in the right areas, getting himself up against and beyond the fullback far too easily for opposition defences to be happy about. But from our point of view, obviously we want him to be in that position. But unfortunately, his final ball is just lacking at the moment. I think that's something that can come. That will certainly come in time, given a steady run in the side. And of course, he's scored goals so far. And which Aluko again has struggled to do. Aluko, yes, he's got two, three, four assists, something like that. But as I say, he's very hit and miss. So he fades, drifts out of games far too much for a player of his quality should be doing.
Well, I think he's probably skillfully and technically wise, Aluko is the better player. It is just as you say, that being in the right place at the right time, which I mean, Kebe had and Barrow. Certainly seems to have.
And being able to help construct the move. I mean, Barrow is excellent. When you have a player who is very ready to receive the ball on the run, and we have a very good habit of getting the ball to him on the run, it makes life a lot easier. And Aluko's not quite that type of player. Aluko's, if you watch the difference between the two, Barrow receives the ball on the run and likes to play much closer to the, I suppose, to the opposition in the opposition final third, whereas Aluko plays a lot deeper and constructs moves from a lot deeper and looks to receive the ball short. So they're two very different players. And of course, when you're playing in a side that is so possession based as we are, that's gonna be an obvious highlight. And of course, Aluko, as we say, is the danger man. Well, certainly highlighted as the danger man by opposition, and it's going to lend itself to be a bit of a problem, a bit of a conundrum if you can't pick up and work out how to get him into games more consistently and effectively.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have this particular worry that I'm going to mention now about Aluko, but about Barrow, and I also thought this about Leandro Bacuna on Monday night, is that I'm not sure that they've ever really had a good 40-game season in them. The teams they've been in at Swansea and Villa, respectively, they've always been in and out the team and on loan and whatnot. Whereas with, with Barrow, I mean, he's got great pace at the moment. But, I mean, is he going to be there in March and April still having that sort of pace? Bacuna, I got the feeling, kind of dropped off on Monday night. Did you think Bacuna had that sort of, the engine room performance that we usually expect from him at the moment?
Yeah, I think Leandro Bacuna, it remains to be seen, certainly in the Championship, but he's had a fairly consistent run of games at Villa in the Premier League. I think he's certainly got it in him. If you look at him physically, he's a man mountain. He's not particularly tall, but he's a brute ox of a man. And he just strikes me as the sort of player that has a 45-game season in him. Barrow, as you say, remains to be seen. But again, Jimmy Cabe never really had a 40 games. He might have done it once, but he was fragile, shall we say. And Barrow's carrying a bit more, brute strength, a bit more physicality to himself. He can handle himself a little bit more. The one thing that you always worry about with quick players, obviously, is the hamstring. I'm not sure what Barrow's hamstring history is like, but provided they remain in a position or in a healthy state, shall we say, we'll be absolutely fine.
Liam Kelly and Joe Vandenberg are certainly two people that I would say have improved in recent weeks and helped the fact that Yapstam hasn't really been able to, or really been fancying changing his team too much. I would say that Kelly was the type of player that Stan would have wanted to take off halfway through Cardiff, and we're going to get onto the whole comeback effect in a minute. Would you say that Kelly is someone who's improving his performances but hasn't quite got the whole 90 minutes done yet, has he?
I think Liam Kelly, with every performance, with every appearance, will learn a lot. He's still very young age. He's still still very much learning his trade. He'll have learnt a lot from that. There was absolutely no question last season Stan would have trusted him in such a physical game. We saw what happened on his debut at Rotherham, and I don't think he would play him in such a physical game again last season. Whereas now he trusts him. I think it did. As you say, you know, I appreciate we're now touching on what we're going to talk about later, but it did have an effect later on in the game when Cardiff really started pressing. And I felt he should have gone off earlier just to provide that extra little bit of beef in that midfield. But there's no question that Kelly's learning. Although having said that, again, his effectiveness in the middle of the park is he's a player who keeps the ball moving. But he's just struggling with the creative side of his game. And when he first entered the fray and entered the world of first team football, he was touted as quite a creative midfielder, and he's not been overly creative recently, certainly from open play anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny, who's on the podcast a bit on the Tyler Sen, has sort of started relating Liam Kelly to Ollie Norwood. And I think that's a bit of a storyline that's emerging, that maybe creative players who get into the team just sort of settle back into that role, and they just find it a little bit too comfortable being a bit deep and, you know, knocking things around the centre circle rather than actually getting forward and creating chances in and around the box like Kelly was doing at the start of the season. Definitely, maybe that's just what, you know, we'll have to see about him going forwards. And I mean, you know, we've touched on it enough, we're gonna have to talk about it then. The complete failure to control the second half is how I've described it in my notes. We just didn't have any, I mean, the possession we had, I was sat in the Eamon Dolan stand, it was miles away from me, any possession that we had. And any sense of control in the game went out the window, with Cardiff having a lot of possession. Cardiff were a good team, we can't forget that. They had two big, strong centre-backs who dealt with pretty much every ball over the top. And I mean, do you see this as a failure that we had to control the game, or is this more about Cardiff actually being a decent team and wrestling it back from us?
I think I'm erring on the latter, sort of somewhat glass half full to a degree. Cardiff are a very good side. They are a Warnock side, and Warnock sides put opposition teams under pressure. We've got to remember that no other team since Warnock took over has picked up more points than Cardiff. So even to get a 2-2 draw out of the game in itself was you could say it was a result. Obviously, it's not necessarily what you get, it's how you get there. And you're right, we didn't control that second half at all. And I say at all, well, we didn't control it at all. We never had had the game under control, the management of the when the ball was out of play. And you're looking for, in those situations, you're looking for the bench to recognise that. And even though we created chances, particularly in the early part of the second half, you still felt you needed the third because Cardiff were going to come back at us. And they did. And I felt, well, you know, they had a little flurry 5 minutes just after half time, went a little bit quiet for 20 to 25 minutes from there. But certainly around 65, 70 minutes, they had 15, 20 minutes of absolutely solid pressure. The ball was just coming back at us, back at us, back at us. And it's when that happens for 5 minutes, you're thinking something's got to change here. And I just felt that we didn't have a great level of sort of physical presence on the bench. But at the same time, you're thinking, bring on Thiago Alori maybe, and for Liam Kelly, maybe go. You could say that it invites pressure. There are ways of playing three at the back and controlling the game. Certainly would have given us an extra man in that back line and to be able to ping the ball around as we seem to want to do. But certainly, Liam Kelly, unfortunately, as I said earlier, in this kind of game, when you're 2-0 up and you're looking to close the game out and manage the game while trying to nick the third, he's the sacrifice that's got to be made. And we didn't make it soon enough. And it was noticeable that we were looking to bring on John Daddy just before Cardiff scored their first. I just felt that's 5 minutes too late, because literally he comes on, Cardiff have got the impetus from that goal. And I won't say the equaliser had an air of inevitability about it, but from the amount of pressure that Cardiff had, it was also not surprising that they got it.
in terms of an air of inevitability about it, I think I was kind of avoiding the issue in my mind and sort of saying, no, we'll be fine, we'll get a third, even after they scored. I was like, no, we'll get a third. Just didn't come. And, I mean, looking at the bench, we just had a lack of midfield alternatives, didn't we? There wasn't a... You know, you want Van den Berg on the bench, you want a Bakuna on the bench, but they're already out on the pitch. So there wasn't so much that Stam could do, and even then, I think, as you're right, Thiago Aloy is the one that he's actually been bringing on off the bench quite a lot lately.
Yeah, and that's where you were looking for George Evans, maybe, to be fit.
Yeah, definitely.
If he's fit, he's an absolute shoo-in for that role.
Yeah, and I think that was what Stam probably would have done had he, you know, even 65, 70 minutes in, but he just didn't do it, and he paid the price for not taking the risk, as it were. And I'll just run through what Stam said after the game quickly. He said, in the second half, we knew what to expect. If you have a 2-0 lead, you know they're going to try and get that goal, which can give them a feeling that can get them something from the game. And we have been warned about that from other teams this season. But we still created chances to score that third goal, which would have killed the game. You don't score the third goal, you know they're going to play very direct balls into the air, into the box. And sometimes that ball can drop to someone's feet and they can score with the goal. And that's what's happened, basically. And I agree with what he said. It's almost, I mean, with hindsight, it's always great. And he's obviously got a lot of hindsight there. I would say about this, it kind of reminded me a little bit as to when we went to Bristol City last season and we were 2-0 down, pushing for promotion. Bristol City were the team in the lower half of the table. And I kind of felt like at 2-0, if we lose the goals from 2-0 down, we lose 3-2, we're relegation candidates. If we can hold them off, we're playoff promotion candidates. As it is, we've drawn and we're somewhere in the middle. So is this the sort of game to reset your idea, or did you have the idea anyway that we were going to be mid-table? Does this confirm that?
Well, I certainly think last season, all right, you know, to get 80 odd, however many points it was, 85, was it? It was an absolutely phenomenal achievement. But, you know, the general consensus was it was never going to last, given the way that we had played, the way that we got there. There were some performances. We were highly, highly efficient with taking chances last season and winning games 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, whatever. It was a different beast this season. We've evolved. We're not the same side. We're not playing quite the same way. We're more direct. We're playing with a lot more intensity as well. So we're a different side. That's going to take time to bed in. And, you know, we saw that, you know, pretty much up to the Middlesbrough game. I quite happily turn around and recall a tweet that I put out after the Middlesbrough game. Rare for me because I don't generally go on Twitter after games. But and said that I couldn't see it changing and he had to go. And I'd like to think I've been completely proven wrong, because since that game, on the whole, we've been, you know, very, very good on the front foot most games, controlling games, creating chances. I think we're a better team than this 14th position at the moment suggests. I think we'll be pushing for playoffs. It remains to be seen if we can manage games and see games out better than we did yesterday, Monday. Sorry, we'll be in a decent position. No, make no bones about it. As I say, Cardiff, I mean, they're managed by a wily old fox who
thought
knows
you could say the something else beginning with an F.
That's a family show. he knows the division inside out and he knows how to get results. No surprises with the way his teams play. You know what you're going to get. It's just a question of, you know, can you see it out? And we weren't able to last night. And sometimes that happens in football. Let's not beat ourselves up about it. They're a good side. They're second for a reason. They don't concede many goals. They don't score a huge amount either. But, you know, we've come away on you know, even Stevens. We dominated and controlled the first half. They dominated and controlled the second half. You could say, you know, on balance of chances created, we deserve to win. But on balance of play, a draw was a fair result. I'm not beating myself up over it. I actually think we've matched Wolves, certainly for an hour, and we've matched Cardiff. And they're the two top teams in this division. We've beaten Derby. They're fourth, I believe. We, you know, even in the bad run, I wasn't there for the game, but I'm led to believe we battered Bristol City and they came away with a lucky 1-0 win. So there's no reason to suggest why we couldn't be pushing for the playoffs. It's just a question, as I say, of seeing games out and making sure that we pick up the results that the performances warrant.
Yeah, we've got a group of four teams on 27 points that we're part of at the moment. And, you know, the teams in at Brentford, Sheffield Wednesday, Norwich, all certainly the teams in exactly the same position. Certainly Sheffield Wednesday are 9 points in six games, 11 points clear of relegation, 10 points behind the playoffs. More than half a season to go, obviously. I think we've only played 21. And, yeah, I mean, I agree with the most of what you said there. So we'll have to see how it goes. We've got Ipswich away next, which we'll be previewing in just a bit. There'll be no pub chat or news bites in this week's podcast because we've got the end-of-year awards in next week's Christmas special. So we'll crack straight on then with the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So straight out of the bag, we've got an email from Mark Killick, who's got in touch with us at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. He has told us about his trip to the Cardiff game, rather, saying it was a chilly game last night at the Mad Stad. I felt like a penguin shuffling to keep warm amongst the other loyal Royals who took the time to turn out. Only about 11,000, actually, bit of a side note there. Supposedly was the attendance. That's TV Monday night December football for you. He says, I was warmed by the great football Reading played in the first half. It was a pleasure to see the ball moving quickly between the players in the precise triangles before moving rapidly up the pitch to goal-scoring opportunities. There were still some heart-in-the-mouth moments where the ball pinged around the Reading goal, waiting for a good clearance, but all was good. It was pleasing to see a strong start to the second half with some good goals, with some more goal opportunities. 15 minutes from the end, I'm not sure why the team decided to go far more defensive. Was this the strategy? Were they getting tired? In my opinion, this allowed Cardiff to get back into the game and score their two goals. Many Reading fans will see this game as a defeat. Cardiff fans, I'm sure, will see this as a victory back after being 2-0 down. I look at this game as generally a good Reading performance and an entertaining game. Plus, Reading didn't lose when I hadn't expected them to win against a second team in the division. I'd like to have been a fly on the wall in the dressing room to hear the truth behind the team's decision to fall back and allow Cardiff into this game. What's your more informed opinion as to why the team decided to do this? Keep up the good work for the podcast. Thank you very much for that email. And, well, Dave, what do you think was discussed in the Reading dressing room post-match then?
Well, I just want to go back to a point that sort of struck me, and it was sort of highlighted within that email, was that we decided to go more defensive. You know, when you're 2-0 up, it's cliche alert, it's obviously a dangerous scoreline. But that doesn't mean the team into its shell and becomes more defensive. Certainly, we were looking to hold on to the lead. But in terms of the pressure that we were under, I don't believe it was our creation to a degree. It was that completely negates to take into account just how good Cardiff are at putting teams under pressure, just how good Warnock teams are at putting teams under pressure. It was them that caused the barrage of attacks. They played the ball directly up to the top. They would almost certainly in that second half win that second ball if there was a challenge to be made, or pick up the loose ball. They'd play it out to Hoylett or Mendes Lang. But Hoylett in particular in the second half was on fire, I felt. He was excellent, really, really, really good, and showed Sonny Aluko how to play that role in many ways. He was certainly unlucky not to create a goal scoring opportunity on more than one occasion. So I'm not overly convinced by the argument that we shot ourselves in the foot to a degree. Certainly the players anyway. We didn't go more defensive. It was simply, in my mind, Cardiff played better that second half. They were atrocious the first half. And they put us. They were on the front foot from the off in that second half, and ultimately deserved their draw. In terms of discussions in that dressing room, they inevitably will take the positives because we played well. We played well for the best part of an hour. Certainly from a defensive point of view, and absolutely from an attacking point of view, with the exception of the cutting edge, the finishing touch to a move. So they'll take the positives, but they'll know that they've shot themselves in the foot. Certainly with the poor first, really. It was cross was too easy to get in. And one thing that really exasperates me with defenders these days is sometimes when a cross comes in, they will just waft a foot at the ball and use the pace of the ball to clear the lines, you know, and that's fine if the cross is whipped in with pace. But the cross wasn't whipped in with pace, and McShane is just, and he's almost, you know, it looks like he's wafted the wrong foot at the ball and just dropped 16 yards out. And take nothing away from the finish. It was an excellent finish. But I just despair at defenders just wafting ball, wafting feet at loose balls or crosses. The second one, as soon as the cross went in and you saw it was going at the far post and you saw who was at the far post, you think there's danger here. This could result, this probably will result in a goal. And, you know, he was unfortunate with the header in the first instance. In the end, Tomlin, again, 6 yards out, has absolutely wellied it. But fine margins in football, literally, if that ball is less, is about half an inch, this sort of the outside of it hits the bar half an inch outside of the goal, it bounces down onto the line and not over it. And that's the fine margins. He got a little bit lucky, but, you know, it was a good enough shot to go in, you know, inevitably. And, you know, maybe, you know, 18 months ago, that goal wouldn't have been given. 2 years ago, that wouldn't have, goal may not have been given. We might have got away with one. But of course, it's, you know, if you don't, you look back to 2010, it's not the first time Cardiff have got away with one that just crept over the line. And I'm still not convinced that Jay Bothroyd's one crept over the line in 2010. But hey.
Forensic scene on the maybe incidents that Reading have been hard done by, and Watford fans can all message in about the time that we scored, even though it went about 5 yards wide of the post. I mean, my sort of opinion on what the Reading players would have said is simply one that, I mean, I agree they'd have taken the positives, they'd have been disappointed. I don't think they'd have felt like we went too defensive, because at the end of the day, they were the players out on the pitch who would have been in charge of not being so defensive. They would have wanted to control the game. My personal opinion that I actually thought at the time is that I'd have taken Barrow and Aluko off, thrown Behrens and Popper on, and just had those two up front on the wings, causing a bit of counter-attacking opportunity in the hope that that's what we get out of it. That's not what Stam did. He's got his reasons for that. He's in the position, not me. And, you know, we've got a point out of it. So we'll move on then. And Matt says he thinks that complacency has been an issue since Stam took charge. He says we rode our luck last season, but this campaign we've conceded a lot of late goals, and last night it cost us. Hopefully the lesson learnt. Hugh van der Laar saying people have criticised Stam for not making changes in the Cardiff game, but given the lack of options on the bench, what would you have done differently? I mean, I've kind of just sort of said that. You would have said you'd have brought George Evans on had he not been injured, I believe, Dave.
Yeah, you've got to go with who was on the bench. And this is maybe going to be slightly controversial given what he offers defensively, but I wouldn't have played Kermigan in the midfield. I would have probably probably put John Daddy in the midfield if you're going to put one of them there rather than one of them up front. And I would have used him because, you know, in one stage in particular, I distinctly recall that Kermigan was just walked around. It was quite embarrassing to see it in many ways. He's not a midfielder, and he shouldn't have been there in the first place. I can only go back to what I said before. I would have brought on Thiago Alori, and maybe put him where David Edwards was, and pushed David Edwards further up the pitch slightly to where Liam Kelly was obviously the advanced of the three midfielders. I would have put Ilori and Van den Berg in the middle there, or maybe gone five at the back and had Ilori, you know, in within the back five or back three, with defensive wing backs, and gone from there. We would have had the extra man in the middle then, and maybe, just maybe, we, you know. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe we would have had that extra man to block the first and get a little nick on a header at the far post for the second. Who knows? We'll never know. But yeah, there are a multitude of options, and, you know, Stam's got to live by the sword and die by the sword, hasn't he? And he's not died by the sword, but, you know, he's had a nick out of his ear yesterday.
Yeah, I think Stam generally speaking does sort of live and die by his decisions. It's not too often he'll shirk away from that. Last couple of ones from the mailbag then. Ben simply says Stam out, which is a sort of theme that hasn't really been popping up in the mailbag too much recently. Different Ben Brenton says Stam did wait too long to make his changes. With the way they were pressing, we needed fresh legs on the pitch to last the 90 minutes. Options might not have been great, but could have seen us doing so full time. And Cam, changing the topic slightly, says January is fast approaching. Who do we buy? Now, handbags, I'll just have your prioritised position for this, I think. I'm going to say I don't know if it's the striker that I want. I don't necessarily think that Kermigan and Bodvarsson, if Bodvarsson stays fit, I think you've got two decent enough options there with Sam Smith backing up. I almost think, like talking about our thing earlier, I think that a centre mid or maybe even a right back is our bigger priority at the moment.
That's a tough one now, isn't it? Do you know what? I still think we need the 20 goal a season striker. I know Kermigan signed an extra year, but we need that player who is going to be in and around that area. Almost, you know, we need a player that's going to be, you know, sort of Kermigan-like, Shane Long-like, Kevin Doyle-like, you know, that kind of player who can lead the line as the lone front man. I'd also quite like to see a left-back, because at the moment, obviously, with Jordan Obita injured until at least the end of the season, it's looking like, and Tyler Blackett just not up to the job, left-back is imperative for me, even if it's on loan. But, yeah, we need balance, and at the moment, we haven't got that balance.
Well, we are being linked with Declan John from Rangers, I think, is where he's at now. He's certainly one who's been linked recently. I just think the thing is with the strikers, I don't believe that maybe on loan you'll get someone. I don't believe that 20-goal-a-season striker is up for grabs in January. If the club have a bit more cash than they used to have and they're going to flash it a little bit more, as we saw with Aluko, then that's great. But I just still don't believe that that's not necessarily the type of player that you sign in January. I think you can bolster the midfield and get some more.
It depends on where you get them from. I think if you look in League One potentially, you know, it might cost, certainly will cost a pretty penny. You know, you maybe take a gamble on League Two as a League Two level striker as backup to Kermigan, Bodvarsson, and you know, vying with Smith for that third place. Or you look abroad. Certainly, there are bargains to be had in France. You could potentially look in Portugal. And even, you know, you could potentially look, you know, somewhere like one of the top clubs in, say, Belgium. Maybe they've certainly got a good youth system over there. So their clubs have. They're starting to bring some really good players through, even though they're not actually playing in that specific country. Or there's even bargains to be had in Germany. You know, you could look. Germany would certainly be a little bit more expensive than, say, France or Portugal. But certainly there are some good quality players who are playing in the top divisions of countries that would probably, you know, you'd probably consider the equal of the Championship. You know, let's not, you know, beat around the bush. Yes, it's the second tier of English football. But in terms of quality, I think the majority of, not every single Championship side, but the majority of Championship sides could hold their own in the top divisions of probably all but the top five leagues in Europe. So there's quality around, or equivalent quality around to the Championship. It's just a question of how that player in particular may respond to the 46-game season in English football and whether or not they'd have it in them and whether or not they could adapt their game to what, you know, because it is a unique set of circumstances and a unique division.
Well, we'll certainly be talking about some strikers who, at Ipswich, they have a trio of strikers who I would describe as Championship stalwarts. So maybe that's the sort of route we should be going down as we preview the Ipswich game next up and talk about the Prediction League, which Handbags is, of course, in. And that will be in Any Other Business.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter.
At The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.
So it's a trip to Portman Road up next for the Royals. And, you know, we actually have a decent record against Ipswich in the last few years or so. I dug back into the archives. We've won 9, drawn 2 and lost 1 of our last 12 games against Ipswich. And actually, in the 1940s, we had a 6-game spell where we lost every game in the late 1940s, Dave. I don't know if you can remember that one yourself, if that was one you were down at.
Was that before in 82?
So, well, that means we've got a better record for those with a shorter memory. As I say, winning 9 of our last 12 against Ipswich and going to Portman Road on Saturday. It's actually a difficult game at the moment. McCarthy's got them playing quite well, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. This is typical. It's exactly the same kind of scenario in many ways as Cardiff. They're a fairly direct and physical side, managed by a South Yorkshireman, a Championship stalwart. You know, you mentioned their three strikers. Let's not ignore the fact that Mick McCarthy knows the division inside out and knows how to get results in this division. Maybe not quite to the level of success that Warnock has certainly over the last few years, but certainly a capable man, producing teams that grind out the results. Make no mistake, it's going to be a tough test, but we've had a good practice on it on Monday night.
Yeah, it's Marcin Wakehorn, David McGoldrick and Joe Garner, who are three names that, I mean, pretty much every Championship fan will know about, who are leading the Ipswich line. All of them got a decent amount of goals. I think Waghorn's on the most, in maybe in double figures now. So, I mean, I don't know where to go with my prediction for this. I think I'm going to have to err on the side of caution and perhaps say, you know, we've only lost one of our last six, so maybe this is the game that something catches up with us. Maybe this is the game where, instead of getting those the sort of own goals and deflected goals that we had it on Cardiff, that we don't get, and maybe the opposition get them instead. So in prediction league terms, I think I might put this down as a 2-1 defeat. So I don't know what yourself is going to go for.
Well, McCarthy's sides do have a habit of not capitulating, but being outplayed and outclassed by sides that like to pass the ball and maintain possession. Now, we didn't have two outstanding games against them last season, 1-1 and drew one. The game at Portman Road, I felt we were a little bit lucky, but they, you know, they were, at the same time, they were, everything about them was Tom Lawrence. They're a different beast. They've got a different, front line that's totally different now. Well, I say totally different, they've just got David McGoldrick. But yeah, it's totally different now to what it was last season. Different challenges, different styles of different types of player. But I just think the way we're playing at the moment and the chances we're creating, it does lend itself more to playing away. And the only game that we've lost in the last seven was against Wolves, was it not? And that was the home game, which we probably should have got something from. In fact, arguably, you could argue we should have got something from. But the away games are... at the moment, well, we seem to be getting a little bit more joy and certainly scoring more goals. And I'm going to plump for a nice little 3-1 win here.
Well, that certainly will help your place in the standings, because as it stands at the moment, yourself and Johnny are labouring back on 8 points. Your last correct prediction came at the Sheffield Wednesday game and you had a 1-1 draw and it finished 0-0. You went for a 1-0 win against Cardiff, so you were inches away from getting a point. And as it turned out, myself, Westy and Tom Crocker, who all went with 1-1 draws, picked up the points. So me and Westy now are 9. Wim is on 11 at the moment, having said that Cardiff would beat us. And Tom Crocker of the Wokingham paper has scored his 4th straight consecutive point, which means he's now on 13 points. So he's now got a bit of a lead. You get your 3-1, then you're back pretty much on second place, as it happens, for the weekend. So, we'll see how it goes. I think I'll have to see how Wim, Johnny... and Westy see this as well, because I think it's kind of like the Cardiff game where there's going to be a big spread of results. I'm always worried about those games, like the Barnsley home game. I went with a draw purely because I worried that if we all predict wins, then that'll be bad. But that won't happen this time out. We'll have to see how it goes against Ipswich. And, that's it for the episode number 147 of the Tyler Sten podcast. Thanks very much for joining us, Handbags. Hopefully you'll be down with us next week for the Christmas special.
I should be, yeah. It'll be a pleasure to see everybody again. It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work out how I'm going to get so many people around so few microphones that we have and see how the technology side is going to work. But we'll...
Skype on the other side of the table.
Yeah, absolutely. One big Skype call. All in our little... One table each, actually. We'll just sit at different ends of the ends of the restaurant. And
why don't I go to the restaurant? Why don't I just go to an internet cafe?
Yeah, that sounds like a much better idea. or in someone's house, if only one of us had a big enough house to fit all of us in. So as I say, hopefully it'll be a good attendance next week. If you have any your questions, getting in for that, get them in at thetylerstent@gmail.com or the Facebook or Twitter. Keep an eye on the website as well, as we keep an up. We're getting into transfer rumour season at the moment now. So there was a Declan John rumour that I mentioned a minute ago. Liam Morgan, West Ham is another thing that we've covered on the website and hopefully flicked off. As it's been reported a number of times now. And that all remains for you to join us for next week's show. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next time. Come on, your arse.
you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail, even when it seems on your tail. Funny how I always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Wow. Making your mark.